Begin.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language. You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
I'm back.
Oh, yeah, we're all back. I'm Morgan Nickel, big mouth dickhead from the internet.
And I'm Dylan Reeve, briefly disconnected.
We're having a lot of internet problems tonight.
Google just suddenly forgot who I was. It's like, you've lost your authentication.
Wow, that would suck really bad. Can you imagine how... Do you have, like, backups of all your stuff that is stuck in Google?
Oh, my God, no, that would be the worst thing in the world.
Hoo-wee. That's one of the risks of the cloud. And, I mean, I wonder how careful all those guys have to be, because I have great misgivings about storing all my stuff on other people's servers. I have great misgivings.
It is kind of scary, but it's also becoming sort of unavoidable. And you think of all the services that just, you know, up and quit from time to time.
Yeah. The advice from the chat room is download all your Google stuff once a month.
How do you even do that?
Don't know. I'm sure that they'll have some of that Google takeout or whatever it's called stuff, right?
Because my Gmail, just my Google Mail account is, let me just find this out, because it's really fucking big.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know.
Couldn't you just,
gigs?
Surely you can just IMAP that out and then it'll only get the latest?
I don't know, 12. I've got 12.8 gigs of mail in my Gmail.
Right, well, IMAP that, no worries.
Yeah, that won't be a hideously unpleasant experience at all.
I mean, can't you just IMAP it to another server? I mean, don't you have a server? Surely you've got a server somewhere.
No, I don't anymore. Well, I don't. Not a dedicated server anymore.
I've been considering buying a better server than I currently put a lot of my stuff on, but it just seems like so much work. It's easier to let other people deal with that stuff, and I guess that's why we've gotten into this mess.
It really is, though. I mean, if you think about the pain in the ass that is configuring Apache servers and IMAP and keeping them up to date and secure, like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah. No, definitely don't want to do that. Don't want to deal with that. The thing that amazes me is when big companies decide that they don't want to do it either. I think that is a terrible mistake. That's a weird move. So all this cloud stuff, it feels like it's for small companies and individual people. Big companies that don't have like their own server room, that's weird. I think if you're of a certain scale, I just think it makes sense to have your own stuff.
You look at a big company like some of the New Zealand ones that have transitioned over to cloud-based services, I think some big government organizations and things. Mm-hmm. The actual, like, trying to replicate the types of services that those products offer on your own network is a huge undertaking.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Like if you've got staff spread out all over the country or all over the world, trying to actually make a usable, even email system is hard enough.
I guess really what I mean is running your own service so that you have some degree of control, and you can do that using so-called cloud services. But things like, I think it's called OwnCloud, and it's essentially you build your own. And if you're a sufficiently large company, you get kind of all of the benefits, but while also retaining control and some sort of certainty that, you know, companies go out of business.
Certainly, there were, when I was running IT for a smallish company, we looked at we were trying to look at transitioning to Google Apps instead of using Outlook on a local hosted server.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there are things that just aren't possible in the Google Apps that, you know, like you can't have an administrator that has access to everyone's mailbox, for example.
Right.
That sort of thing. Yeah. It's just really simple stuff and you can't do it. And you're like, well, it doesn't really work.
That seems like you could have some liability trouble. If you can't, if you receive a serious complaint about someone, and obviously, you know, we've had to deal with that, you know, very, very infrequently, but we've had to deal with that at work, you know, some of those complaints.
There are a bunch of things that are really hard to do on the Google Apps.
Yeah. If you can't look at the user's email box to verify, you know, if an accusation is true, I think that gives you some liability issues, especially if it's not, you know, just a customer. It's a staff member.
Yeah.
You know, that's
we couldn't even get close to replicating the way we'd done them. Yeah. The other thing was about the way certain domains worked and things.
Yeah.
Just for the specifics of that organization. But
yeah.
Yeah, so the cloud services obviously can't be as flexible as your own service because they have to be kind of designed for everyone.
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
Don't remember.
Oh, that's right. I got signed out of Google, so I couldn't participate in the Hangout-y thing that we're doing.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, so we're not using Skype this week because Skype kept on falling over, and so we're using a Google Hangout, which feels really weird to me. Last time we tried, I seem to recall that the audio was soft and something else was strange, but I can't remember what.
Well, we were trying to use video that time, though, I think.
Oh, yeah, that might have been the problem. I did briefly turn on my webcam, so you would have been able to see the unbelievable devastation in my studio here. It's absolutely shocking. This cold snap, it's like an ice storm. It's like living on Hoth. And yeah. None of that's true.
Is that another one of your nerd references I don't get?
Yeah. 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 You know, yes, it's from Star Trek.
Captain Skywalker from Star Trek.
Yeah. Do or do not make it so.
Earl Grey.
So we did 48 hours this weekend, and that's the real reason that my studio is absolutely destroyed. Everything is everywhere. And usually everything is carefully piled up in small stacks.
How about that short deadline filmmaking?
It sucks in the rain.
Oh, yeah. We did all ours inside, basically,
yeah,
in one location.
That would have been smart.
But even then, we had one outdoor scene, which was drizzly, but it wasn't a problem.
Mm.
But it got dark early. Like, yeah, we actually lost, you know, we lost believable daylight at about
sunset was 5:12. Yep. Sunset was 5:12, and because it was quite overcast, yeah, it was a very short day.
I had lights outside trying to pretend to be daylight, but that wasn't really It wasn't quite.
Why the shit is the competition at this time of year?
Yeah, it does. It's actually slipped later. Well, it's always been around this time, but it's been slightly earlier and later.
Yeah,
it's certainly been earlier before.
Sometime earlier in April.
Earliest I remember is maybe it's been in March.
Hmm.
Definitely early April.
I want to know what Ingress is. I was out playing Ingress, says the chat room. Apparently the chat room stumbled across a team.
The chat room in this case is Kiwana. So
I've decided I'm just going to refer to anyone who talks in the chat room as the chat room.
Oh, did you see where the chat room said this and then the chat room said back to the chat room that you're a dumb head?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, apparently it's an augmented reality game.
Oh, not that it's anything to do with that, but a kind of augmented reality. One of my coworkers has done this thing. I don't know what it is. It's like zombie something or other.
Zombies it's a run?
Jogging exercise thing, but zombies you are run. Chased by zombies.
Zombies run.
Zombies run?
Yeah.
Have you done it? Have you played it?
Fuck no. Do I look like I ever run?
Good point. He was really into it. He was really enjoying it. Running around his neighborhood being chased by imaginary zombies.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got friends who've done it. Yeah, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. I use a cross trainer and I use weights, but I did not run.
He was his own team.
Oh, fuck me, a one-man team. Tell you what, a two-person team is bloody difficult. One person, possibly easier.
I think this year was 6 or 7.
What? Oh, I say that like 5 to 8 is probably the optimal.
It was a little bit difficult though because there was times when, you know, it was difficult to get people to do all the things that needed to be done. Like a couple more would have been good and a few more slightly specialist positions. We didn't really have
actors, do you mean? Any specialist actors?
No, we had 2 actors, but everyone else was just sort of generalist. Yeah. Like, I'm not really a camera operator, but I was operating the camera.
Yeah. I hope that one boy with the bad haircut wasn't one of your actors.
One boy with the bad haircut?
Yeah, who came with you to the starting line.
Ah, right, no.
He had a bad haircut.
No, wait, who was that?
Bad haircut. And he seemed to think that he was going to be an actor, but who knows. So how did it go for you?
Not me?
No, no, it wasn't you. How did it go for you?
We made a film.
Yeah, and do you feel good about it?
Yeah, I think so. It's difficult. Like, it's, I always get this kind of funk immediately afterwards where I go, you know, there was all these things I could have done better, and oh, this didn't work and this didn't work, but you're quite involved and close to it at that point, so it's hard, yeah. Hard to know. I have to wait until we see it with some people who haven't seen it before and kind of see if they get what we were going for.
The worst time for me is Sunday about 2 to 4 a.m. when, like, the long cut is done and I just don't see how it's going to work, you know, and I'm starting to realize that there are some shots that aren't right, you know, and that's that, and I'm starting to, I've lost track of my story, you know, it's now over a day since I wrote it, and I'm losing track of kind of the idea of how I want it to work, and I'm now just sort of cutting and trying to recreate the story based on who even knows what sort of vaguely remembered details. I mean, even though I've got a script and a storyboard to help me.
Even a storyboard?
Of course. I don't think anyone... Wow. I think anyone who doesn't make a storyboard should make a storyboard. I think if you don't make a storyboard, you'll make a better film if you do make one.
One of these... there's a couple of things that we've kind of never really had time for that I've always wished we would, and it's sort of another reason why it'd be good to have a couple of other people who really know what they're doing in certain things. Is one is scheduling.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, just as simple as determining what order to shoot the scenes in.
Yeah.
Because we kind of make it up as we go along and then end up making some, you know, snap judgments going, well, that scene doesn't have to be a daytime scene. It can be a nighttime scene because we're running out of daylight.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is even just as simple as making a shot list. Mm. I don't need a storyboard, but just a shot list so we can say, just kind of figure out what the coverage is. We're always shot the same way, which is, you know, shoot a master shot of the scene.
Yeah.
And then do coverage, which is, you know, going to be one angle on one character, one angle on the other character, and then, you know, little pickups of certain lines and bits and pieces that we need.
Yeah.
And that's sort of always been the way we project, because that first master becomes kind of the rehearsal once when we get a chance to sort of rough out the scene, see how it flows, and then, you know, repeat the same process through the different angles.
Yeah.
But I've never had a shot list. We've never really known ahead of time quite what we were going to do.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's something I've always wanted to do, and never. And we've always, you know, often gone in with the best intentions. You know, thought, okay, we're going to write the script, and then we're going to do this thing, and then we're going to do this thing, and we never get to this thing. And this
we'll have a script done by 9:30, and then blah blah blah. Yes,
exactly. Then we'll break it down, and we'll go onto the thing, and we'll generate a schedule, and, you know, and we'll arrange catering, and we'll, you know. But
those people who have their script, you know, they talk about on the chat room or on Twitter or wherever, they're like, got my script done, and it's like 9 p.m. I just think, how unambitious are you being? You know, those people who've finished shooting by 10 a.m. on Saturday. It's like, what? How much have you pared back your production in order for that to even be possible?
The only way I can imagine happening is if you end up deciding to go, like, do a one-shot film or something.
Yeah.
But even then, if that were the case, I would put the shooting off till way, way later, so I have a lot more chance to kind of rehearse and just make sure everything I'm going to put into it is exactly what I want it to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is always weird when you see people like Matthew, who's the one-man team I was talking about, Hot Dog Sandwiches, his team name. We were editing at work, and he came in on Sunday at about 2.
And he'd finished?
Having finished his film.
Right.
And returning some gear that he borrowed.
Right.
And we were still, you know, at that point, still hadn't even locked off an edit.
See, just, to me, that says... Cut. You know, given that he had another 4.5 hours, that tells me that he didn't do as much as he could.
Well, I think he was going to go back and tinker, but he'd done it. He was satisfied that he'd finished his, you know, finished his thing.
That's absolute madness.
Yeah.
That's madness.
But I'm sure he's made a fantastic product because he does that stuff really well.
Right. There are a few things that I'm worried about. I'm not going to watch mine. There's one thing which I know is a problem in that.
What do you mean you're not going to watch it? Oh, you mean you're not going to view it before the screening?
That's right. So, yeah. So I know that there's going to, I mean, there's always going to be a couple of audio problems because I put, you know, I do some audio trickery, you know, putting in, let's call it Foley, shall we? Let's just say that that's what it is. It's not Foley, but that idea, you know, sound effects. I've got a bunch of them in there. And because I didn't ever have a chance to watch it through from beginning to end after about, you know, 10:30 on Sunday.
15 minutes.
I know that there was, something will have been shifted. There's absolutely no way it hasn't been. And I'm also a little bit worried that the music might, the level of the music might be a little bit too high on some of the dialogue stuff.
Yeah, we actually lost it. One of our music tracks has vanished somewhere between when we finished editing and when we exported.
Right.
Kind of annoying.
And it's possible that I've got that same problem. It's possible I've got some music missing as well. I didn't know, I didn't think anything like that had happened, but it might be. But something that is definitely an issue is that I didn't do my colour. And so I shot super flat. And also in one scene, it was actually quite important that I do colour because I needed to swap it for into sort of nighttime colours. And because I never got to that, you know, I'm not sure if it'll make sense. Hopefully it'll look like I'm celebrating and it's just a little bit strange and amusing. But it might look like there's an obvious, really weird, awkward mistake. But, you know, you don't know until you watch. And I don't see any point really in watching until Friday night. It's not like I can do anything about it.
No, fair enough.
Nothing I can do about it. But I will change those things, those really obvious mistakes. I will change them before I put it online.
Yeah, I'll probably put the missing music back in, but otherwise I'll leave it alone.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't do any real polish, but the, you know, just those couple of things which, you know, if I'd had another hour, there's no way I would have submitted without doing them. Those things I think I'll do before I upload.
Yeah. So you got in with, what, like 7 minutes to spare or something?
Yeah, yeah. Found bloody luxury. It was comfortable. It was comfortable this year. Heaps of time. Last year, Jesus, it was scary last year. I mean, I was sure I was late.
I was in with 20 minutes to spare.
Right.
And still walking down the little thing. I still got applause. I'm like, come on now.
Yeah, I didn't understand why people, they seemed to be excited. And like people were putting their hands out, hoping I would slap their hands while I wandered up the thing. And I was just like, no. That's for people in the last minute.
I took one high, but that was from the young child of another team I know.
Right. I actually only even really acknowledged one person, and that was Ant, who said hello.
Right.
And so I was like, oh, hey, how's it going, blah, blah.
Yeah, did we do any, has anything else happened in the last week aside from a bunch of people, 800-odd teams making short films in a weekend?
I got myself in a lot of trouble. I purchased some art. I purchased a series of three prints, short run prints. And then the next day I showed my partner and she was pretty sure that I was pranking her. And as soon as she was like, nah, what did you really get? I was like, oh fuck, I'm in so much trouble.
Most awkward reaction to a present ever.
Yeah.
Wait, was it a present or?
No, it's not a present. But she was like, I'm not sure you can ever put that up. What if children are ever here, or you know, my parents can't ever see that? And I was like,
Oh my god, I can't wait to see what it is now.
Yeah. Well, there's only one place in the penthouse that it can possibly go, and that's here in the studio, probably behind the door, so that no one can see it unless the door is closed. At them, I guess. Three things, not one thing. But
the chat room wants to know when we'd start discussing X Factor, but the chat room also wants the chat room to go die in a fire. So
I'm happy to talk about X Factor. I wouldn't say I was extremely happy. That's why I, you know, corrected myself. I will talk about the LOVE debacle.
What's that?
Well, there's a team called LOVE, and they are allegedly rappers, and they fucking suck, and they're still there, and I find it baffling. I think it's because Hamilton have voted to keep them there because they're from Hamilton, and Hamilton needs, I don't know, some kind of affirmation. They want to be known for something other than herpes and chlamydia and gonorrhea, and they figure that this piece of fucking shit band, not even a band, these awful karaoke bitches, they'll do because they're better than an STD. But Hamilton, I would actually like to correct you. They're not better than an STD. They're worse than an STD.
I was going to say, I thought you'd written their tagline there. LOVE, better than an STD. That's not bad. That works. It's kind of like, it's got a bit of a ring. That could be their first single. I have seen precisely 0 minutes of The X Factor.
Even though old Robsy's been talking about it? Or is that why you haven't needed to watch it?
As discussed previously, I don't have a TV aerial, and I'm sure as hell online to on demand it.
No, I wouldn't ever go on and on demand it either.
I keep meaning to go and see Harry. That's a TV show I keep meaning to watch.
Oh, that's
and,
right.
And I quite enjoyed the Blue Rose, although I didn't see it all.
I watched about 2 episodes of Blue Rose, and then I was friggin' delighted to see Blue Rose. A friend of mine told me that it was on Easy TV, and that's really cool. I don't know what that friend was doing on Easy TV. I probably accidentally visited.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
In a different country. So it's Oscar Kightley, isn't it?
Discourse.co.nz/VPN. Yes.
It's surprisingly inexpensive. Oscar Kightley, there's something about his face that I exactly. like. I like his face.
He has a very attractive face.
Yeah. Yes, in some senses of attractive. I mean, I wouldn't say that he was... appealing, yes. I mean,
comforting?
Not attractive in the sense of, like, really handsome, because I don't think he's handsome. I mean, he's not ugly, but there's something just nice about his face.
Inviting?
No,
that's weird.
I'm not sure about inviting either. It is a warmth. You know, it is an unmistakable kind of, sort of a strained kind of a friendly... It looks like he laughs a lot, you know. There's a kind of an easiness.
I think he does.
Yeah.
Would you like to hear some stupid news while we're talking about nothing in particular?
Yes.
Okay. In the US, there's a commission. This is a private commission. It's not like a government-run thing, but a commission nonetheless, named the Commission on the Theft of American Intellectual Property.
Right.
It's a tank, I suppose, for. Yeah. Intellectual property law reform.
Yeah.
And they have written an 84-page report called The Report of the Commission on the Theft of American submitted to the US Congress, I believe.
Yeah.
And it makes a number of observations and suggestions about how to reform intellectual property protection.
Yeah.
And at one point, it goes into some discussion about perhaps measures which could be used to, let's say, improve intellectual property protection. It says, so this is a quote now. Additionally, software can be written that will allow only authorized users to open files containing valuable information. If an unauthorized person accesses the information, a range of actions might then occur. For example, the file could be rendered inaccessible. An authorized user's computer could be locked down with instructions on how to contact law enforcement to get the password needed to unlock the account. Such measures do not violate existing laws on the use of the internet, yet they serve to blunt attacks and stabilize a cyber incident. That's an actual quote, stabilize a cyber incident, to provide both time and evidence for law enforcement to become involved. Goes on to say, while not currently permitted under US law, increasing calls for creating a more permissive environment for active network defense that allows companies not only to stabilize a situation, there's that stabilizing again, but to take further steps, including actively retrieving stolen information, altering it within the intruder's networks, or even destroying the information within an unauthorized network. Additional measures might go further, including photographing the hacker using his own system's camera, implanting malware in the hacker's network, or even physically disabling or destroying the hacker's own computer or network.
I'm strongly in favor of changing laws to be more permissive so that people can attack other people's computers. The next day, those guys would realize their mistake.
Yeah. So essentially what they want to do is create software that would detect somehow unauthorized files on your computer and then, well, it's called ransomware and it's used as essentially a viral attack.
Yeah.
So these people are crazy. Anyway.
Let's be really clear about something. The internet doesn't belong to those guys. It also doesn't actually belong to governments. Governments don't control it. All they can do, the internet, I mean, all they can do is turn it off. It is actually possible for them to turn it off. But they cannot control it because we have encryption, right? And we also have time on our side. Anything that they do to lock everything up or put barriers in the way has to be perfect. And it has to be perfect forever. Any mistake on their part can be exploited. And it will be. Every mistake is always exploited. It's inevitable.
Now, of course, it's worth pointing out this isn't law, and this isn't necessarily going to become law, obviously, but this is an industry group that believes that this is what they do.
This is an industry group that is...
Well, I'm pretty sure it's an industry group.
Well, it is a group that partially sort of represents an industry that has got extremely deep pockets and pays lobbyists a huge amount and funds politicians to, you know, to the tune of tens and hundreds of millions of dollars per election cycle. So they represent a serious threat to our freedom.
Also, let me globally,
because these corporate
three purposes of the commission.
Societies don't exist to serve the interests of corporations. Corporations exist
beyond corporations. This is a larger look at how internet theft is damaging the USA. So the three purposes of the Commission on the Theft of American Intellectual Property are to document and assess the cause, scale, and major dimensions of international intellectual property theft as they affect the United States. Number two, I like this one especially, to document and assess the role of China in international intellectual property theft. And number three, propose appropriate U.S. policy responses that would mitigate ongoing and future damage and a better enforcement of intellectual property rights by China and other infringers.
Well, best of luck controlling China.
Shouldn't be hard. I mean, they're
good luck with
a small nation. They can easily be leveraged and leaned upon.
Yeah, it's funny that you mention the word leverage, because who owns the U.S. now? Who owns all of the U.S.'s debt? I'll give you one guess. It's five letters and it begins with C.
Azerbaijan.
That's not five letters.
I can't spell.
You're not a good guesser. Also, it doesn't begin with C. So you know what I find a little bit baffling? This is Arrested Development. I mean, I'm not confused by the storylines. I'm confused by the popularity of the show. People seem to come in their pants at the prospect of the new episodes, which I guess were released last weekend, and I haven't bothered to watch because it's just not that exciting. There's one reason that the show was cancelled. Not enough people were watching. And the reason that not enough people were watching is that it's not that fucking good.
To be fair, enough people watching has entirely different meaning for commercial television than it does for, say, Netflix.
Yeah.
So, like a number of shows... Arrested Development had a very loyal and large-ish following among certain people who were sad to see it go, but weren't quite lucrative enough for a commercial television network to keep the show on air. They didn't buy a lot of DVDs and things, and they wanted more.
Yeah.
And Netflix found a way to deliver more. And those people, mostly, I understand, are happy. And, you know, win-win. Who cares? The show gets made. People who want to watch the show watch it and make some money. Everyone wins.
Well, I guess that there's an opportunity cost, because while they're funding Arrested Development, they're not funding House of Cards. I mean, of course, they are funding House of Cards because they're not going to make another season, but I want more House of Cards and I don't need more Arrested Development. Let me just put it that way. Keep it simple.
I dare say, though, you're possibly not the only arbiter of what goes on Netflix.
How?
Or television
how
in general.
How dare you, Dylan? How dare you?
Now, I was never a huge Arrested Development fan. I watched some of it and I liked bits of it. I've just started, because the Arrested Development got in my brain, I started watching it. I've just watched the first episodes of the first season. And it's kind of enjoy it.
Yeah.
See how we go. I'll keep watching it for the moment. Because I've been binging on The Office, the original US Office, for a while. The original US Office. The US Office. You know, before those British assholes stole it.
Someone's heart just broke when you said that.
Anyway, so I've got like 40 episodes through The Office, and I'm like, I need to change. So I started watching it to see how that works out for me.
Yeah,
I'm not keeping up with current shows at the moment. I'm just watching old shows. I'm just, you know, it's like I'm going to my DVD collection instead of watching TV.
The your internet connection is sucky. I'm only mentioning this just to acknowledge it for the listeners who will have noticed the same thing. I'm not mentioning it because I'm going to do anything about it.
Okay, well,
that was amazing timing. I don't know if you actually said words then, but basically there was sort of a Cylon fade out. It went dong. It was sort of like Aurak turning off. And I mentioned Aurak turning off because the chat room keeps talking about Blake 7. I don't even know if you're talking or if the internet has completely dropped you now, so I'm just going to continue as I was. So complaining is something I put into the show notes, the show rundown. Lately, complaining has been working really well for me. Not whining and not moaning, but actually complaining. After on Sunday night, after we went to the finish line of 48 hours, we went out and had dinner at a pub in Parnell, had a couple of beers, which I thought were well-earned, and it was lovely, and we were happy. But they didn't have much on the dessert menu, so we decided to walk up Parnell Road and find somewhere else and, you know, see what was what. And we stumbled into some shitty fucking so-called Italian place, which will remain unnamed, and they had a bunch of lovely-looking stuff on the menu for desserts, and we went in, and we're like, yay, we'll have desserts, please. And they said, here you go, here are your desserts. And we both took about approximately one bite of our $15 to $20 each desserts. And we were like, these fucking suck. And so we got up and I walked up to the counter and took out my FPOS card. And I said, we will be leaving now, please. And she said, oh, are you already finished? And I said, no, those desserts are terrible and we can't eat them and we can't finish them. And she said, okay, well, I'll just get the manager. And I was like, don't really need to talk to the manager. I just want to leave. And she went and got the manager anyway. And he came out, turned out to be a chef. And I was like, these are terrible. And he said, oh, well, now this is the weirdest part. He said, oh, I understand the problem with the cheesecake. And I was like, I haven't told you what the problem with the cheesecake is. How do you know there's a problem with the cheesecake? And if you knew there was a problem with the cheesecake, why did you serve me? And then he said, but what was wrong with the other thing? And I can't even remember what that was, brandy snaps or something. He was like, what was wrong with the other thing? And the problem with the other thing was far worse than the problem with the cheesecake. It was an edible. And he was like, blah, 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 but it's just bloody blah. It's just chocolate. And it's like, no, motherfucker, you need to taste it. It tastes like industrial lubricant. It tastes like chocolate flavored syrup, not chocolate syrup. You know, you'll understand the distinction. You know, like that really cheap sort of syrup that's used for making milkshakes. It doesn't taste like real chocolate. And that's what they'd put on the thing. And he was like, all right, you don't have to pay. Thank you.
Oh, that's reasonable service.
Yeah, pretty good service, actually, but they should have served good food in the first place.
That would be better.
And the other case of complaining that worked pretty well for me was over at Albany Westfield, where I'd never been before. We went up there quite early with Sal and her parents a few weeks ago, and we had breakfast, and I really didn't like my breakfast. And I said, I didn't like that breakfast. That bacon tastes like ham. And she was like, oh, okay, you don't have to pay for it. And here's a free coffee. And I was like, sweet.
Yeah, we've done the same. Melanie's quite good at it.
Yeah.
It's just, it's plain when shit is wrong rather than just sit there and be quiet about it. Like, she ordered a pizza from Pizza Hut and they brought the wrong pizza.
Right.
She called them up and went, wrong pizza, you fuckers. You put the shit that I didn't want on it.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, sorry, we'll bring a new one.
Yeah.
An hour later, they turn up with the pizza that is cold because the driver apparently got pulled over by the police for speeding.
Awesome.
So she complained online, and then the store manager rang her up in English and was trying to make excuses. And she's like, no, it doesn't matter. You fucked it up. And anyway, hung up on the store manager for being useless. And then the regional manager rang back and we got the entire value of our order credited.
Yeah. Well, so that seems like the minimum what should have been done. Well, you don't want to hear excuses. You want to hear solutions.
Yeah, so we're not going to that. It's relatively narrow, so we can go.
Man,
to one.
This is this Google Hangout, it's not working great. It's not working great.
What do you want to do about it?
Not going to do anything about it.
Nah.
We could talk about some news.
Well, we can try, and I can just sit here and go, all right.
Well, all right, one thing I want to talk about is why the fuck David Farah keeps talking about Auckland. He keeps posting.
I've seen him.
He keeps posting about Auckland Unitary Plan stuff, and it's none of his fucking business.
Isn't it weird how the whole fucking country wants to run Auckland?
Stay the fuck out.
The fuck off out of their world.
Stay out. As long as they stay the fuck out, we will all stay pretty much unengaged. I think that the national government, and actually the Greens do this as well, messing around, the Greens ignore Auckland, and I think at their peril. But the national government seem to want to push Auckland around, seem to want to control Auckland, right? I think that as long as Auckland, I think they should leave Auckland alone, because Auckland actually waking up and realizing that we've been systematically... obviously not destroyed, but our infrastructure has been intentionally diminished for about 60 years by generally national governments. As soon as Auckland actually realises that, the National Party will be in deep fucking shit. And for David Farah to keep spouting off about what he thinks should be happening in Auckland when he doesn't fucking live here. Here's a secret that everyone knows about David Farah. He is a National Party mouthpiece, and when he's not being directly a National Party mouthpiece, he's testing their future policies on lunatics, right? He's seeding, putting salt in the soup. He's seeding the water. I don't even know what the phrase is, right? He's testing out the next spiel. You know, it's always party line stuff with that fucker. And for him to be talking so much about unitary plan stuff makes it clear that they are... I mean, they've already been fucking with Auckland. How is Nick Smith... How does he get to decide what happens with the unitary plan? How is it Nick Smith? He's an MP fucking Nelson.
The National Party set us up
with a super city.
And then don't let the super city run the fucking city.
And they're not letting Auckland Transport prioritise Auckland's transport needs.
Yeah, Auckland doesn't get to decide what Auckland gets. It's bizarre.
Right, but the thing is that we're not children. We're a bunch of voters.
Yeah, I'm not fond of it. Don't like it. I don't know enough about the Auckland Unitary Plan. What I do know is the stuff that I read against the Auckland Unitary Plan stinks. It feels like bullshit.
Yeah, that's because generally it is.
Yeah.
I mean, no document or policy is going to be without fault.
Absolutely.
Without some flaw. But much of the so-called sort of debunking of the Unitary Plan isn't even of the Unitary Plan. It's just this weird, I don't want to use the phrase NIMBY because, I mean, obviously everyone is worried about their, their community. You know?
Well, as far as I can tell, it's actually mostly driven by people being afraid for the value of their home, of their property.
Well, obviously, bad news, motherfuckers, your property is already overvalued and at some point that's going to correct. And it won't be because of this.
Yeah, it's 17 suburbs in Auckland now have median houses above $1 million?
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely ridiculous. It's obviously unsustainable. You know, there are equations for working out housing affordability, and ours is way out of whack.
But the fear of those people is that an increase in housing will make their property less valuable because, you know, lack of contention, and also that increased development around there properties will make their properties less valuable because they just will be less valuable. You know, the neighborhood.
Yeah.
So it's very self-centered. I understand it, but it's stupid.
Yeah. So the chat room has unwisely asked if there are even 17 suburbs in Auckland. Listen, chat room. There are fucking more than 17. We've got a third of the goddamn population.
From here.
We've got a third of the goddamn population of New Zealand. Just the old Waitakere City is probably 17 suburbs. You doofus. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, there's a lot of, how many suburbs there are in Auckland? It's very... The weirdest thing, so... When I was in LA, the weirdest thing I find about that,
all right,
is the
here, suburbs
there are just for
the
cities.
For the old Auckland City,
yeah,
starting at Arch Hill, I only got to Hillsborough, and that was 17. I didn't even get to Kingsland. There are about 50 or 60 suburbs in Auckland City, the old Auckland City. And that doesn't include North Shore, Manukau, Papakura, or Waitakere, or Rodney. You fucking doofus. Another thing that the rest of New Zealand...
The weird little distinctions that you get, like, Massey, Massey North, for example, which are really just Massey.
Another thing that the chat room, that the rest of New Zealand needs to realise, is that Auckland is much bigger than you realise. You need to realise that. I said realise 3 times, now 4. Auckland is an actual city. And I don't really, think that any other cities in New Zealand can't. No, you can't count them all. The list is really long. 17. You fucking doofus. It's like 200. Fucking
stop.
Hell.
Chat room.
Shut up, chat room. So where were we? Oh, yeah. David Farah, fuck up. Fuck up before I fuck you up.
I still, the thing that I find so perplexing about David Farah is he runs this Kiwi blog site, right? It's his site.
Yeah.
And in many ways, he's reasonably moderate.
Yeah, actually, there is quite a lot of stuff that I agree with him on.
But he manages to, he tolerates, accepts, maybe even promotes just some fucking batshit nuts on his website.
Yeah.
In terms of the comments. Like, you see any story on there and you go into the comments and
it's horrendous.
It is. Yeah. And I understand that it's, you know, he wants to promote a free exchange of ideas or something, but
Jesus, that's not what he wants. He wants page views. That's what he's promoting.
Maybe. It's very simple.
It's very simple. His page views are artificially inflated by those lunatics. I think there's a pretty good chance that he has less readers than, you know, for instance, Public Address, who have far fewer page views on their actual articles than he has, because it's not full of nutcases. It's not full of people who are commenting all day. I mean, obviously, Public Address system has a bunch of commenters in it, but they're not nuts. The
public are separated from the articles, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. Mm.
And the value of the comments on Public Address seems much higher.
Yeah, much higher. Very few lunatics. Usually, I'm the crazy person in the room on Public Address, and on Kiwi Blog, I feel like a friggin' archdeacon or something.
A voice of reason.
A very moderate person on Kiwi Blog. A mountain property owner has sent a letter to neighbours telling them his house is not a brothel, after another resident delivered flyers claiming that it was a brothel.
Oh, this sounds like classic neighbourhood hilarity.
It used to be a brothel is the thing, and then he purchased it. And this person, who I guess found it on Google, I don't understand how they would find a brothel address on Google unless they were looking for brothels.
Maybe if you search the street name, if you're like just arbitrarily searching your street name on Google and found it listed as the address of a brothel.
Actually, all right. Awesome. Let's see what happens. Grange Road, Mount Eden.
The main part of this I'm curious about is what the hell is it like to like a place that was formerly a brothel? How's that set out? Like 12 bedrooms? 12 bedrooms, one lounge?
12 bedrooms, 24 showers. I didn't notice that it was weird.
In-room hot tubs.
Bench seats in the hall. I don't see any mention of this brothel.
Dungeon/basement.
I've gone 5 pages deep, which is not very deep, I guess, but...
That's what she said.
Yeah. Shut up.
I saw the headline for that and I meant to read the article. I never got around to it. That's wonderful. I'm so pleased he's not a brothel.
Yeah.
Has he thought about just, you know, going with it?
And starting a brothel.
They think I'm running a brothel here anyway, may as well.
He'd need to get various permissions from the council.
Well, that sounds like a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Next story.
The Kenyan police reckon their fake bomb detectors are real. So there's a Brit called James McCormick, who was convicted for selling fake bomb detectors that were rebadged novelty golf ball divining rods. And the Nairobi police chief, Benjamin Githinji, has told reporters that his department's fake bomb detectors are serviceable and contributed towards a recent elimination of successful grenade attacks. No, it didn't.
Well,
no, they didn't. Very sorry. No, they didn't. If anything contributed to the recent elimination of successful grenade attacks, it's probably traditional policing or the bad guys ran out of grenades. Because your bomb detectors don't detect bombs.
Do we have his address in there? Because I'd quite like to sell him a bomb detector.
Yeah, one that definitely really works for real honest.
Yeah, it's like some leftover prop bits from our 48-hour film. I'm sure I could, you know.
What was your genre? I don't remember what your genre was.
Robotics/android/cyborg movie.
Oh, that's
45
right.
minutes.
Man, I would have had to do a lot of sound effects on that because it would have just been me. But every time I moved, it would be servo noises, right?
Yeah, but you to be honest, you're just, while I did that.
No, I would not. I would not do it with my mouth.
Oh, it looks awesome when you do it, though.
No, it'd be terrible. That's what
our film is called. Incredibly Advanced Robotics.
Oh, Christ! Is it really?
Yeah.
That's a great name. My film's called Crybaby.
What a shit name.
Yeah, it's a shit name and it's a really shit film, probably full of mistakes, but I don't know. I'll find out when you find out. So there is one man left alive who was born in the 19th century.
Wow, really?
Yep. So on Thursday, James Emanuel Cisnet, who was 113 years and 90 days old, he died. And so the last known remaining man alive, born in the 19th century, is Jiromon Kimura of Japan. Last man standing. He was born in 1897.
That's a long time ago.
That's a very long time ago. So the chances are, actually, there was an interesting chart. There was a chart of... No, there was a, what was it? There was an algorithm of telling you how often the oldest person alive would die. And it was something, was it slightly more or slightly less than every year? It was something like that. 1897. That's incredible.
It is a long, long time ago.
Now, there are apparently a few women. But one man. He'll be popular.
Next story.
Yeah.
Man
in the super old folks home.
A man controlled by satellites makes 100 calls to 911 in a month and vows to continue. He keeps a logbook of every 911 call he's made. And he boasts that he's probably set a record, a world record. And he doesn't believe that he's wasting the time of the emergency responders because he has an emergency of his own. He believes he's being watched by shadowy government authorities. And he thinks that his body is controlled by satellites. And here's a quote. "My brain, I can feel it starting. I'm blasted by the signals every couple of minutes. I yell and I scream, stop it, I don't need this. But they never listen." And so he calls 911 and they can't help.
Why does he think... the shadowy government organization that is 911 or the sheriff department or whoever can help him?
I will tell you why, and it's the reason that I'm not laughing about this story, is that this guy is crippled by mental illness. This is not a funny story, and I think it's a real shame that it seems to be being reported as a funny story. This guy needs treatment and help and care. He does not need mocking.
I was going to say, why hasn't he got it? And then I think
it's America.
Yeah, because he's in America.
Yeah, because he's in America.
Next story.
Not the home of all the worst things in the world.
No, they have peanut butter M&Ms.
I would like some peanut butter M&Ms. I made the mistake of getting a large jar of Nutella.
How is that a mistake?
It is not full anymore. Revamped. Did you see these new disability icons? These new...
Nope.
So you remember the old one where it's kind of very reclined and passive? And someone described it as making disabled people look like objects.
Okay, so now we've got like a dude racing in a wheelchair, is that it?
Yeah, it looks like he is leaning into it and his arms are up and it's very dynamic and he looks like one of those kind of racing wheelchair guys.
Oh, is he one of the guys from Murderball?
Well, he's a white on blue icon. So, I mean, it's hard to say exactly what
he is.
No,
there was definitely a white on blue guy and Murderball.
Well, it's that guy. It's a photo of that guy. Did he look like a stick figure? Was his head a perfect circle?
I think he used to be the guy who did the Pack and Save ads, but then he had an accident.
Right.
Yeah, that turned.
And he turned from black and yellow to white and blue.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. That's part of the accident.
Yeah.
Next story.
So, speaking of Nutella. Nutella.
We weren't, but all right.
Well,
we mentioned it. We weren't speaking of it.
So there's something called World Nutella Day, and it was started in 2007.
By Ferrero?
No, by a woman called Sarah Rosso, who really loved Nutella. And so she started World Nutella Day and promoted recipes and stories about Nutella. And the lawyers for Nutella have nasty-grammed her into stopping.
They are not very smart.
They are not very smart. They have made themselves look like a bunch of fucking doofuses. So it's Ferrero who make Nutella.
Why would you do that, Ferrero? What is wrong with you?
Well, seriously, what is wrong with your brains? These people love your product and they promote your product. And so your lawyers have attacked them to the point where they capitulated and said, okay, well, no more Nutella Day then. What is wrong with your brain?
Like, when you think about it, like, Ferrero is kind of, well, Nutella has kind of become an internet meme in the same way that Spam did. And you look at what Hormel is it that owns Spam? You look at how they've kind of embraced that in many ways.
Yeah.
And Ferrero's being a dick about it. Well, that's just a shame.
Yeah, it's a terrible shame. So have you heard of Lebowski Fest? Have you heard of Lebowski Fest?
No.
So have you ever heard of the movie The Big Lebowski? I'm sure that you haven't seen it because you haven't seen movies, but you're aware of the existence of a movie called The Big Lebowski?
Yes. The Dude Abides.
Yeah. You're crossing a line, Dylan.
Yeah.
I'm going to mark you zero. So the same guy that started Lebowski Fest, his name is Will Russell. He started a Pee Wee Herman festival, and before he could start it, before he could get it started, Pee Wee Herman nasty grammed him with cease and desist letters to the point where Pee Wee Fest has now been cancelled.
Have you got some sort of like list of fan events that have been cancelled by angry lawyers?
It just happens that several of these fucking idiot stories have happened lately. These goddamn morons who can't see what side their bread is buttered on. It kind of is a lawyer's job to be a fucking tool, but it's a company's job to make sure that the lawyer is representing them how they actually want to be represented.
Yeah, God forbid they be Colin Craig'd.
Precisely. So if these lawyers are acting without the direction of their client, then, you know, the client should probably have better control of their business. But lawyers should also have better judgment. Anyway. And corporations should have better judgment.
There are certain things, like if you work in public relations and you don't understand the internet and social media, you're going to have a really shitty time.
Yeah.
And the same thing I think goes if you're, like an intellectual property lawyer especially, or you know, just a corporate lawyer, and you don't understand the dynamics of the internet, you're just going to fuck things up.
Look up the Streisand effect.
Yeah, but beyond that, also just understand how your clients express their joy and satisfaction about your products.
Yeah, don't attack your fans. Don't attack your clients' fans.
And also don't attack legitimate criticism, which is another thing that happens from time to time. People use stupid legal shit to get rid of criticism. Oh, you used our logo unnecessarily, so we're going to DMCA your review page.
Yeah.
It's stupid.
Yeah.
Next story.
Do you want to hear a story about a liar? New mum unaware of pregnancy.
What?
My ass, you were unaware of your pregnancy. It's such a shocking mistake that you accidentally came to New Zealand and had your baby that you didn't know you were going to have.
Unless she was
overweight. What an amazing shock it was. It's very hard to
apparently believe. Some people, when they're really overweight, don't realise they're pregnant because A, they can't see it, and B, for some reason, they don't feel the baby moving and things.
Yeah.
But otherwise, the fucking baby moving inside you, how do you not know that?
How do you not notice that you haven't had a period in 9 months?
Well, that also would seem to be some sort of tip-off, although some people have very irregular cycles and other strange...
Well, how do you not notice that you haven't had a period in 6 months then? I mean, you must have been fertile in order to get pregnant in the first place.
I guess so. Seems to be how it works, although I'm not 100% sure.
There's a photo, and she might be one of those very pear-shaped women. But she doesn't look fat. You can't see her body. You can only see her face. You know, there are some deceptive fatties, and everyone's met one on a dating site, I think, and been like, ah, shit, I've got to pay for this fucking dinner.
Yes, everyone's done that.
Everyone's done that, man. Come on, let's be honest. It's 2013. Literally, everyone has now done that. And it's so fucking disappointing. Oh, my God. Ah, you're not curvy. You're bulgy. They're different words. Curvy means some of these angles need to go inwards, and all of yours go outwards.
Morgan, stop.
Next story.
Let's go and move on to a safer subject. Islamism.
Oh, yeah. Bingo. Can't go wrong.
Next story.
So now this one's actually really shocking. There was a French far-right activist. He's 78 years old. And he was extremely upset about same-sex marriage legalization, which happened there. They were the 14th, I guess, right after us.
It was like a week after us.
Yeah. He went into Notre Dame Cathedral, and he shot himself in the mouth.
In the mouth?
Right in the mouth. He killed himself because of this. Get over yourself, you fucking nutcase. There's literally no effect. There is literally no effect that any of these lesbians and gays getting married will have on you and in your relationships that you have.
I may or may not have said this while the gay marriage thing was happening here.
Yeah.
But I actually feel sorry for the people who were, you know, freaked out by it all. I feel sorry for people who live in that amount of whatever, that paranoia or fear or something. It must be fucking terrifying and horrible.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand it for a start, and then I feel sorry for the people. I don't feel angry. I don't know, but mostly I feel sorry for them. These people who fear that somehow it will actually cause some sort of bad thing,
yeah,
be it societal breakdown or, you know, God's vengeance.
Yeah,
I feel sorry.
It won't get over yourself.
Of course it fucking won't. Yep. It's ridiculous. And it must be a hard life to live with that sort of paranoia or whatever it is.
It's really sad.
Yeah, I feel sorry for this guy as well.
Yeah,
that he was in such a bizarre frame of mind that he thought that was an appropriate reaction to a law change that doesn't
affect. Next story.
60% of Portland voters in a municipal referendum, for the fourth time since 1956,
had really cool moustaches and beards and trendy glasses.
Rejected fluoridation.
Oh, like that.
60%.
Yeah.
It is the.
I think the fluoridation thing is crazy paranoia, but at the very least, for that one, there is a scientific basis that it is actually possible to have too much fluoride and it can have negative health effects, although the people who believe it is a mind control drug are clearly insane.
We don't want more chemicals in our water. I've heard there's already hydrogen in there.
Wait, no.
No, not really. Well, the first part, yes, but the second part, I don't think so.
It's hydrogen. I think someone said there might be oxygen.
Yeah. Shocking. There's chemicals in there, bro.
Possibly twice as much hydrogen as there is oxygen even.
Have you heard that there's molecules?
Oh, my God, really?
Yep.
Lots of them?
Some number of them.
Yeah.
Well, I've got a tab for The Verge open with no apparent story in it, so moving on.
The interesting thing about fluoridation, apparently...
1 minute.
A lot of research suggests that it isn't actually necessary these days. So we have, you know, toothpastes have come along so much that we don't desperately need to fluoridate water anymore. But it's still not actually that bad.
Yeah. I think there is no hazard from fluoridation in a modern water reticulation system.
Not unless you're drinking shitloads of water and you're a crazy obsessive toothbrusher.
I don't think that there is any amount of water that you can drink where fluoride will be a problem. The water will be a problem itself.
Well, you know, the chlorine.
And if you brush your teeth too much, you'll damage your teeth. It's not because of fluoride. It's just because you are brushing your teeth with an abrasive substance. Woman forces stepdaughter to wear dowdy thrift store clothes as punishment for bullying. for several
five
weeks. $50 worth of thrift store stuff she had to wear to school.
Three.
Brilliant. I like this kind of parent.
Two.
Creative.
Actual punishment. See you next week. We're definitely not doing this right after this.
You're listening to the weekly show on
Wisconsin.
Sorry.
Oh, my God. Right, we're using that one.
I feel like I can't really talk this week. Like my mouth isn't working right. Is it because I'm just having a beer, not a shandy?
Maybe that's the problem. Also, you didn't mix your V with some random alcoholic substance to make a drink.
I've had no
V. Did you see my description of the 48 hours judging process?
Yes, KFC grease.
KFC grease. I'm fairly sure it's quite accurate.
Yeah. We had zero of the Vs this year. Zero.
24 of them, and there were only 7 people on our team, at least one of whom doesn't drink any V, possibly 2.
How many did you have?
I had 2. So someone, it wasn't me, had a lot of V.
Yeah. It's dangerous. I think it's probably all right for the actors to do it once they've finished acting. But I don't think anyone else should do it. Last year I had, I think maybe I had 2 on the Sunday. And that, you know, didn't seem to make much difference. I think it's just if you get into them too soon, you'll just fuck your process up. You'll fuck up your, I mean, when you get like too much sugar and stuff in your system, you know, you get the crash pretty quickly. I think that having water is probably a much better idea.
Generally speaking, I don't find myself to be very affected by caffeine or sugar in terms of the stimulant.
Yeah. So what's the point of having V then?
I actually just quite enjoy it as a drink. Quite like the flavour.
Yeah. Yeah, the flavour's all right. Give me a Monster any day, though. There's something about... I actually haven't had a Monster probably in... Well, whenever I last had one on the show, it must be a year or more ago probably. I liked a Monster. That was yum. Very chemically, though.
I think I've had Monster.
Modified Liberator 3D printed gun made with cheap printer. Fires 9 shots.
And then explodes and blows off dude's hand.
Probably.
I just thought, yeah. Printing a firearm doesn't seem like a fantastic idea.
No. If you want a firearm, you should get a license and you should purchase a firearm that was designed by a professional firearm designer and put together by people who actually could operate their tools correctly and has been tested and proven. And I think that's the only way to do it.
And even then, they still injure people sometimes. I mean, not deliberately. Accidentally. Yeah. The things happen that they don't work right and injure people.
Yeah, they do. It's pretty rare, but yeah, it does happen.
But it's not even remotely rare that they injure people.
It's not remotely rare that they injure people, but it's always in New Zealand, it's because of misuse, you know. I mean, that's obvious. I mean, what I'm saying is it's not because of... not because of backfires, you know what I mean?
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, it's because of intentional misuse. You know, so in hunting, people only get injured when they're hunting because they fall down a slope or stumble into a tree or because they fire without identifying their target.
Yeah, or for some reason they think a deer wears a fluoro vest.
That is actually... I wouldn't be so harsh on that. That orange blaze, that colour pattern, is really bad. It doesn't work safely in New Zealand. What you should wear is actually pink or blue, but a lot of people wear that orange. And when you're hunting for red deer and when you're in New Zealand forest at dawn or dusk, a lot of stuff is orange.
Yeah,
it's a very dangerous colour.
I've also heard that fluoro green yellow is quite good, and that it doesn't look much like other things.
No, you're definitely safer with pink or blue in New Zealand. I wouldn't go with any other colour here.
I'll tell you what, personally. I just want to go hunting. Done.
I suppose that is an option that most people take. Not going hunting, that's cool. But some people like to do stuff. I mean, I've never actually been hunting. I'd like to try.
I like shooting guns, but I have no idea. I have no intention at all of shooting any living thing.
But you eat meat.
Yep, I eat meat. No problem with that.
And you could potentially kill the animals that you eat more humanely if you hunted them yourself.
I have also participated in the slaughter of a sheep, but still have no particular desire to do so.
Right.
Don't have a problem with it, just don't want to.
From my tone, you may be interpreting me as thinking you're a hypocrite. That's not correct, because it's completely normal that most people won't hunt. It's completely normal. Some people are hypocrites. Yeah,
I don't even particularly like killing spiders.
I don't kill spiders. I don't see any point in killing a spider, but I wouldn't eat a spider.
Have you tried?
I've eaten a cricket.
Deep fried?
Was it deep fried or was it pan fried? It may have been pan fried, but it was crispy and it had a kind of a soy sauce sprayed on it. And I got a big bag of them for like 40 baht or something.
I would not avoid doing that.
Yeah, it was all right. You should go to Thailand and eat some insects on the side of the road.
Yeah, I would. One of the things about traveling that I've always wanted to do the most is street food.
Yep. You will have intestinal distress.
Well, absolutely.
Believe it or not,
I have intestinal distress when I eat pizza. So whatever.
Okay, well that's weird. Do you have some kind of intolerance to dairy or something?
I think cooked cheese does bad things to me.
Right. I think you should stop eating it.
Maybe it's just the amount of cheese involved or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Pizza never works out that well for me after the fact.
I had fascinating intestinal distress. I mean, it wasn't distress. It was just, well, you know, it was the obvious symptom. When I had kava in Vanuatu, I didn't expect it at all. I didn't expect that.
I only had a very small amount of kava when I was offered it, and I was like, this tastes awful.
In Vanuatu or in Fiji?
Fiji.
I think that they make it quite differently in Fiji.
Right. They didn't do the traditional chewing it and spitting it thing, at least.
In Vanuatu, it's consumed to intoxicate. So you have quite a bit.
People I was doing it with in Fiji were consuming it for intoxication as well.
Right. Okay. Maybe it was the same sort of stuff then. Yeah, it's very interesting. I think if you have a little bit, you're completely wasting your time and you're getting the worst effects, which are the taste, and you're getting none of the good effects, which is the I don't even know how to describe it. I mean, it's not powerful. I guess mild euphoria. The most obvious initial effect is just kind of a numbing.
Yeah, I actually got that in my mouth and I was like, whatever. This is gross.
Yeah, it's disgusting. My aversion to it has... Man, this is fucking awful using a Hangout. I think that it actually has ruined the whole fucking show because there's just something about our timing. We keep doing this stupid overtalk thing, which we do a little bit on Skype, but not accidentally.
God damn it, I want a better way to do this.
Well, we should just go back to Skype.
Not Skype and not Hangout.
Well, Skype was better than a Hangout, so this fucking Hangout's had its second and last chance. But yeah, something better than Skype, something faster than Skype. I don't know, even know if such a thing exists.
Something that's designed for this purpose. That's right, you know, because Skype's designed to emulate a telephone, not designed to emulate some sort of remote audio contribution.
Yeah.
Anyway, there you go. That's a show of sorts.
That's a show.
Audio contribution over IP.
Sorry, this show is cancelled. Beep.